This is Noisy People. I'm Tim Perkis. Today, my guest is guitarist, composer, band leader, and musical polymath, John Schott. Most artists, either through their own natural inclination or following commercial considerations, limit their work to a particular identifiable style or genre. My guest John Schott has not done this. Instead, he's followed his Hoover-esque appetite for music of all types and styles, and his own music has incorporated these diverse influences, from traditional musics from every continent to American jazz, folk, and pop traditions, to 20th century serial and post-serial composition. If I seem to imply that this makes him a dilettante, you misunderstand me. He's a deep and serious student of musical traditions and of the culture and way of life of musicians. The result has been a stunning array of recorded compositions, large and small, for ensembles large and small, in an unprecedentedly wide array of styles. Our hours-long conversation was a blast and ranged over a wide array of subjects. It took me weeks to figure out how to cut it down to size for this podcast. But I concentrated in the editing on his more philosophical insights about the nature of music itself and the lives of musicians. Before we get into the interview, let's hear this montage I made to show the diversity of his work. He plays in all these samples, and in most, he is also the composer and band leader. See the show notes on noisypeople.net or iTunes for details and availability of the individual works sampled here. John, nice to talk to you.
Hi, Tim Perkis.
Now, I guess the thing that I thought about your work was that it was hard to get a fix on where you are in some kind of genre sense.
Right.
Because you're such an, you have such a broad range of interests and such an eclectic curiosity.
Mm-hmm. I spend a lot of time listening to music, more than anyone else I think I know. And when I listen, I totally listen with no distractions. 75% of what I do as a musician does not involve any kind of publication or performance. It's entirely it makes nothing. It's silent, a lot of it, sitting looking at pieces of music. I'm out of the game, you know, for a big portion of what I do. Not only can I not make a living on it, it doesn't, it's a tree falling, you know, it's Helen Keller falling over in a forest. So, and that's engagement with history. And then it completely affects that 25% that everyone sees. I do that, and then I play with musicians, and that also is fundamental to me, whether it's playing completely notated music or completely improvised music. It doesn't have any difference to me. I just love musicians. I love to hang out with them. That's my tribe. It's so fundamental to what we do to listen to ourselves and to listen to others. It's so collaborative, and we're trained so much to be open and receptive, I think.
Musicians are.
Yes. And I love that about music, and improvisational music most of all. But I'm sure playing Beethoven string quartets has a lot of that, you know, capacity for that kind of feeling too, of creating it in the moment and discovering together with people something.
Yeah, didn't you have someone saying, one of your teachers perhaps saying something like, not really seeing the difference between free improvisation and playing a score, because it's always this choice about like what you're going to play next.
Right. There are two people that...
There's always this kind of freedom in that situation.
There are two people that really said that to me. One was a kid in high school. This kid was really into anarchy theory. And then one day I asked him about it, and he said, well, you know, I kind of stopped calling myself an anarchist because I realized anarchy just is. You don't have to label it or call it anything.
You don't have to sign up for it.
Right, exactly. And also then Gary Peacock, a couple of years later, the great jazz bassist, he had played with Bill Evans, and then he had played with Albert Eiler.
Yeah.
And he said, well, there's no distinction really between improvising and anything. If you operate from a place of knowing that your choice, your place in the world is undetermined at any given moment, you can just stand up and walk away in the middle of playing music, or you can not, you can, whatever, everything you do, and everything everyone else does.
Right. It's kind of like the Schopenhauer thing about once you've decided that you can commit suicide any moment you want.
Oh, yeah.
Then you're, you know, then you're living by choice.
I think that's a very connected...
You know, it's a very...
observation or part of that. And I think that notion has been with me since, at least since age 16.
Making music, we face these things in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like living philosophy or something, as the way I think of it. I mean, the world deals you something that you must respond to.
Mm-hmm.
Your bandmates do that to you regularly when you're playing, too, right?
Provide you with a context.
Provide you with a surprise that you must deal with.
Right. Yeah, right, sure. It reminds me of this lovely quotation by Cecil Taylor, "Logic is the lowest form of magic."
This is from the CD Offering, live at Temple University, a live recording from 1966 of one of the last concerts of John Coltrane. The piece is an excerpt from his composition Leo, and it's Coltrane himself singing and playing saxophone briefly at the end.
That reminded me of that amazing little clip you have of Coltrane singing.
Oh, wasn't that special?
It was amazing, you know. What was great was at the very end, he picks up the horn, and it was like, yeah.
I, for you listeners at home, I just raised my hands in wonderment.
That it's just...
In other words, I think what Tim was saying is it's the same... It's the continuity.
It just blends.
It's like, oh, yeah, that is Coltrane. There's a unity there.
The continuity, but it was so touching because the sound of the horn is so fantastic and you know it, and it's this deep thing you know. And the voice was such a touching kind of failed attempt to do what he does so wonderfully with the horn. Not failed, really, but
absolutely,
you know what
I mean?
Kind of clumsy and
I think that's just very profound.
That's beautiful.
The quintessential master, the quintessential instrumental, relentless pursuit of perfection. He was also at that time beginning to completely transcend that. It's not about mastery. It's not about virtuosity. The master and the dilettante and the beginner are all in some ways equal.
Yeah.
They're equally free. They're equally engaged in the same project of living on this planet.
Their voice has equal validity, you know.
I think he's reaching into that towards the end.
This is an excerpt from John's CD, Shuffle Play, Elegies for the Recording Angel, on New World Records in 2000. Played by the Diglossia Ensemble, an SF Bay Area all-star chamber orchestra.
To say about the Gary Peacock thing, you know, he kind of laid out this notion of your mental map of, you know, he's talking about all the things you are, whatever. He's talking about your mental map of kind of the harmonic movement and this, whatever. But then he had this thing where he said, well, you know, you may think of it differently. You know,
isn't that beautiful?
Which is really beautiful. And I've always thought of this as being the sort of the essence of the jazz thing. Which is, that is the essence of the jazz thing. And the flaw, and exactly the you know, Zappa calls, you know, the funny smell of contemporary jazz, is that there's kind of not enough of that diversity of theory, maybe.
Right.
You know, among the players.
Yes.
And that notion that...
Well, it's become much more pedagogically motivated.
Consistent.
And consistent.
And a lot of things that we like about that music was actually shaped by that element of withholding and kind of competition. And, you know, you got to get in there and you got these scraps. You know, it's like some guy is, you know, they're just putting together like whatever they can get, right? Got something from Thelonious Monk, and they got something else from Dizzy Gillespie, and they got something else from their high school band leader.
Right, and they
just put together something, right?
Yeah. Cecil Taylor again, each man his own academy, meaning you have to make a personal assemblage of your own language, much like an electronic musician has to do. You have to build it step by step, like the Watts Towers, day after day, collecting junk and
turning it into something.
And after 25 years, after 35 years, you'll have a tower. A lot of the knowledge of this music is in stories and anecdotes. It's not in theory so much. And Jerry Grinelli told me so many stories about funny shit on the bandstand and him hanging out with great musicians or playing with great musicians he admired. And gossip. That's a whole part of the world of music education that, you know, doesn't make it into the textbooks or the histories. It's, you know, we continue to tell those stories. Did you know Max Matthews?
Yeah.
You know, you must have stories about him.
Good things come in small packages, Max said. Like diamonds and cocaine.
Right. Why is that? You know, but you need to know that in addition to stuff. I don't know. Maybe that isn't the most profound example. Because you're trying to figure out how these people lived.
Yeah.
How they put together their worldview to get done what they wanted to get done.
Right. That's really what's more...
That's it.
That's really interesting.
Right?
That is kind of it. Yeah, that is.
It's not about playing giant steps. It's about how do we make sense of the world? And that comes out, it seeps through anecdotes like that in little glimpses.
So I should say, if we're ending, we should conclude. Oh. So thank you, John.
Thank you very much, Tim. Should we make it a weekly appointment?
All right.
This has been the Noisy People Podcast, episode number 9. I'd like to thank my guest, John Schott, as well as Philip Perkins for audio guidance, as always. This podcast is available through iTunes and Android subscription and through our website, noisypeople.net, where you can also find images, links, and additional information about the artists and their music. The show is also available through our partner, creativedisturbance.org, an initiative of Leonardo, the MIT Press, and the University of Texas in Dallas. This episode number 9 was recorded in May and released in July of 2015.